Yay. Okay. Also, I had a cold, so I will probably clear my throat a lot. I'm
Oh my
sorry.
gosh, me too. We're like twins.
Twinsies. Twins in every way. You and I.
Get out. Get out.
Welcome to episode 15 of our first ever adventure through the Star Wars universe. My name is Mary Clay. If that's too complicated for you, just call me MC, and I know nothing about Star Wars, but that's slowly been changing. Today, we continue our watch through of the prequels as we finish The Phantom Menace. Joining me once again is Justin Jordan. Welcome, Justin!
Hello, hello. I'm surprised you liked me enough to bring me back.
Woo, thunderous applause! What do you mean? What do you mean, I
It's
like
like,
you enough to bring you back?
here's the thing.
Of
I am so
course.
supportive of your Star Wars journey, and I've been like slow. I don't want to say anything to influence you. So whenever I get like on the podcast, I'm like, oh my gosh, what are you thinking? How are you feeling? But I want you to make your own like judgment of it. I don't
Yeah.
want to influence it too much,
I
you
know,
know?
I know. And that's why I'm also like afraid to. I think it's fun to have you on as I continue this journey, 'cause it's like a good check-in point for you to be like, so, 'cause you were on for the first episode, and that was when I like had experienced nothing, basically. And I still have experienced, in the grand scheme of things, nothing. Like
Interesting.
I've barely scraped the surface, you know? So like these are
Interesting.
fun. And I remembered you saying that you really like the prequels. So that's why I was like, which one's your favorite? Do you want to come on for that
It's
one?
like, here's the thing. The Phantom Menace is the very first Star Wars movie I've ever seen. Like, so I am very curious about your journey because you are watching them in release order. I'm one of the few young people on the planet who experienced Star Wars chronologically. And it's weird because, like, I don't know. There's I when George Lucas says this is for kids, he was talking about me specifically. Because I watched it as a kid. I was like, wow, that's good. Then two, then three. I was like, wait, there's more? What? You guys knew about this the whole time? The whole time, and no one told me? And then you go to four, five, and six, and then it's a whole thing. But yeah, I have a very soft spot in my heart for this movie because I saw it in literal theaters, which is weird.
I think had I started in chronological, I think I'm too old to do chronological.
Interesting. Why is
Because
that?
I think this movie is geared towards kids in a way that A New Hope is not. I mean, wait,
Yes,
yeah.
you're right.
Like this one is way more like, oh, it's for the kids rather than A New Hope was like, oh, it's kind of for everyone. Everyone can come, like you can bring
Right.
your kids, but also like teenagers and adults really enjoy it. Whereas this one is definitely more like, I think kids are gonna get way more enjoyment out of The Phantom Menace than they would have for A New Hope. So I think just as an adult, I think had I started with this one, I would be like, this is a dumb series.
Okay, here's the thing. A couple months ago, I showed my nieces The Phantom Menace for the first time. And I'll be darned if worked. I told them, "All right, there's a princess, right? And it's about like this princess. She meets this boy, and there's like knights and stuff." And they were like, "Okay, we'll watch it." They loved it. They love Jar Jar. They love the pod racing. George Lucas knew what he was doing for at least this little part. And it's very interesting
But
having me.
again,
Oh, go ahead. Go
those
ahead.
your nieces are children.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. Is that like I think if maybe like maybe if I had watched this as a kid when it came out, I would have been hooked and maybe I would have kept watching and you know whatever. But like just as an adult, it doesn't have that draw for me. This movie in particular.
Very interesting. So, as of like today's recording, do you like Star Wars? Like, just straight up, do you like this?
I don't think so.
Really?
I'm
What?
sorry. I'm
You
sorry.
don't like Star. This is a fascinating development. I
I
never would have
think
guessed
this
it.
is
I
I think
thought
this
you
is
would have fell
also
in love by now.
groundbreaking for the podcast because I don't think I've ever said that before. I don't hate it. I'll put it
Okay.
that way.
Okay.
I'm
Okay.
not like actively disliking it. I'm not like I'm not all like grumpy, like, oh, I can't believe I have to watch this. Like, I'm not going to be here to explicitly pick it apart and critique it and just rag on it, because I know that it is something that a lot of people really love and enjoy. And I can definitely see why it has that cultural draw and why mm-hmm. so many people like it. Mm-hmm. I personally am just not connecting with it in the way that most people do, is what I'm currently experiencing. Okay.
So what exactly are you looking for it to connect? You know,
it's just not the most compelling story to me.
Okay.
It's not the most compelling story. And I think also a lot of the reputation hasn't helped me, because I have thought, oh, Star Wars is this huge franchise. It has a Disney World land. It has all these shows on Netflix, right, or not, right, Netflix, right. On Disney Plus. Like, mm-hmm. oh, this has got to be the best thing man has ever created. And it is not.
It's definitely not the best thing that man has ever created. But I think we are also living in a world where it is impossible to take Star Wars on its own terms anymore.
Yeah.
Because of the weight that you're talking about. You know, even with the prequels, and I'm assuming that you will see this as you go on in the prequels have had probably, not, I guess now, 2 decades of rehabilitation.
Yeah, because we're on the 20th anniversary now of Phantom Menace coming out.
Yes. And so, like, years upon years of people dissecting, rewriting history, like redoing what words mean, 20 years of
that. I want to pause for a second because I know it was just a Freudian slip, but I think it was very funny that you said rewriting and not instead of rewriting.
Look, it's true though.
I know, but it's accurate.
We have had decades. Like, no one can beat the Star Wars film in your head. And I think you are also experiencing this in a weird way of, like, you have heard the stories of this great tale of Star Wars. You have such a big thing in your head. Like, nothing can beat the Star Wars movie in your head. And that's why I think a lot of fans are just continually disappointed by this franchise, because they have this grand vision of what Star Wars should be, and they aren't taking it on its own terms, right? So, like, it's super fascinating to hear you, like, wow, it's just not, I thought it would be more compelling, because you're battling the Star Wars movie in your head and you haven't even seen all of the Star Wars. That's crazy. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And, like, I think we're just in a day and age where, I'm not saying that you can't, as an adult, come to Star Wars and become a fan of it and love it. But I think by the time you reach a certain age, especially now, just like especially the day and age we're in, where you are surrounded by content and media everywhere you look, you have consumed so many other stories, so many other movies, so many other, you know, books and shows and all that stuff, that I think by the time you watch this, it doesn't quite compare. I think narratively, they're very fun. They're very flashy. They're very, you know, it's a great spectacle. I'm not like, I would be lying if I said I wasn't like, oh, that was so cool when the spaceship blows up at the end. You know, like, I'm a simple person. I like seeing things go boom. That's always a good move. But I think we're at a point, I would be really interested to talk to other adults in the year of our Lord 2024 who are experiencing, who have recently experienced Star Wars, or who have watched it, you know, for the first time, to be like, what are you thinking? Because I think when you're a kid, when you're 10 years old and you haven't watched as much stuff to compare it to, it's like, this is the coolest thing ever. And then you hold that kind of nostalgia in your heart, in your head, and that kind of, like, keeps the magic alive for you as the years go on, as you grow older, and as you're like, huh, maybe this isn't the best, but I still love it because XYZ, you know?
So I'm very curious about the scenes that we're going to talk about, because it's probably these scenes, I would say, these scenes are the most, like, important moments in Star Wars history from, like, a story perspective and a history of our world perspective. These scenes right here, it changes everything. It's, like, before the last 25 minutes and after the 25 minutes. Because, like, I don't know. I don't want to take
let's,
your flow
let's,
of
let's
show.
Go into it. Yeah, let's jump into it. There is a... So... Previously on The Phantom Menace, the Gungans have agreed to help Padme, who is also the queen. We had that big reveal. I still can't tell Natalie Portman and Keira Knightley apart.
Listen,
it's just the fact that people gave me grief for not being able to tell them apart when there's an entire subplot that hinges on this exact fact.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not, like, I can't even argue with it. It's just that, like, I wish we could have played more with this premise. And if you ever go into, like, the deep weeds of Star Wars, they will, but we're not right now. It's just that, like, it's the entire plot of Star Wars rides on, like, this double switching there.
Oh my God.
Do you think it's believable? Because when they have the makeup, honestly, I think it's believable.
It's like, so, I mean, obviously it's believable because I don't know. And even in these scenes later on when they're like, that one's a decoy, go after her. I'm like, wait, is that Natalie Portman or is that Keira Knightley? Like, I still don't know. Like, I'm still, you know, and they're like, oh, it's a decoy. So
it works,
obviously, I think it was believable. I think it worked really well. I think that's maybe the one, I won't say the one thing this movie did well, but like it was executed perfectly.
Interesting.
Like, okay. To the point where I still don't believe that Keira Knightley was in this movie. Like, I need to see behind the scenes stuff to believe it. Like,
Okay. That's a whole nother podcast because the behind
the
scenes.
Is that a conspiracy theory?
No, it's not a conspiracy theory. It's just that, like, this is also the, I guess, the start of DVD extras in a weird way. This was not on DVD, this is on VHS. But they also made a whole documentary on how they made this movie while the movie was being made, right?
Ooh, and I'd watch that.
It's not a documentary, but it's like in the behind the scenes,
sure,
right?
Sure, yeah.
And you can see the moments where the screws aren't fully tightened. And you can see where it starts like shaking. I think there's a famous moment where George Lucas like watches a cut of it. And he's like, I think I had too much Jar Jar. You can just see everyone like
being like,
no, it's fine, Mr. Lucas. It's fine. You know, this is also the movie where you had unlimited power. You're really going to deny the guy who directed and wrote Star Wars? At this point, George Lucas, he will never be as powerful
he
as he is right now.
He hadn't proved them wrong at this point, you know?
Exactly. So, I would have believed him. Like, who's going to tell him no? Even
I know, yeah.
Steven Spielberg was, like, down with it, you know? He was fine with it. But it's... If you have time, go watch it. It doesn't have to be a whole podcast episode. Just watch the special features.
No. An answer in the last episode, I was asking questions about like, was this actually Keira Knightley doing the voice? Because it doesn't sound like Keira Knightley's voice at all, which I think is also why it's hard for me to be like, that's Keira Knightley. Because of course it's like, well, of course, Mr. Turner. Like with her underbite and stuff, and so you can't imagine her doing this like monotone kind of like deep voice. Her dialogue was dubbed over by Natalie Portman.
Interesting.
So there's an answer to that question.
Fun facts, yay!
And so now there's a scene with Lord Sidious. He's his little hologram being, and he's talking to the alien businessmen, as we have dubbed them on this podcast, because they don't give people names in the movies.
I know, really?
That there is some behind the scenes or books or comics or other shows where people learn these characters' names, but they refer to one of these alien guys as Viceroy, and other than that they never say their names. The captain of Padme's of the Queen's Guard, they never say his name. They just say captain. So I don't know what his name is.
What? I do I not remember this movie? Because I was like, yeah, that's Newt Gunray and Vice Lord Gunray. I do I not remember
the, I this think movie? I would remember a name, Gunray.
Is my brain also filling in the gaps of years of rehabilitation yes, of this movie?
Absolutely.
I'm like, yeah, that's his name.
Absolutely. And that's another thing that gets me about this franchise is that there are a lot of gaps that I think in order to tell a compelling, a good, complete story, mm-hmm. you need to provide all of the information in the one place. If you're going to make a movie, you need to provide all of the necessary information within that one thing. You can't say, it is not an acceptable answer for me for people to be like, oh, well, in this comic you learn blah. I'm like, no, then that means that they didn't tell the story in a complete way in the movie. If you can't gather all the necessary information in the one place, then you didn't do a good job.
Ooh, does this apply to sequels?
It applies prequels? To everything.
Okay. As in like,
like I'm think fine this movie- with,
oh, go ahead.
I'm fine with like setting things up and being like, oh, we're going to explore more of this later. Or, you know, we're purposefully, or we're going to fill in this backstory later. I guess that's fine to like create. I think maybe it's about like intention. If you're like intentionally being like, we're going to leave this as a mystery. We're going to leave this open-ended so we can revisit it to fill it out more in another movie or another way.
Interesting. I'm going to choose my words carefully so I don't spoil anything
for
the future. But one of the things that makes it hard to watch these chronologically is that I think this movie and the next movies that you will see rely on your knowledge of Star Wars as a fill in those gaps. You know what I mean? It assumes that you have watched at least or a working knowledge of Star Wars in the past, like for New Hope, Empire, and Return of the Jedi, right? So does that count as what you're talking about?
I guess,
about?
Yeah. I don't know.
That is
a good argument against that.
Like, because in the, like, not in this section that we're talking about, there's a moment where Obi-Wan is talking to Anakin, right? It's like, these people are going to meet again in the far future, but it's like a throwaway moment kind of thing. Does that,
but like, redeem? Obi-Wan talking to Anakin doesn't affect the story that it's telling now, if that makes sense. Like, I mean, like, it does affect the story that it's telling now, but like, we're not being like, oh, that was a weird interaction, why? Like, it still is relevant to the story that we're watching currently.
Interesting. No comment.
Maybe my
no
more comment? Specific pet, maybe I'll narrow down this pet peeve to say that it annoys me that they don't name characters.
Very fair. I'll give you that.
They're just like, because I understand, which is funny to me because George Lucas is not good at writing dialogue. And arguably one of the most awkward things to do is to just insert people's names into a conversation. Like, you and I already know each other. But if we were like in a movie, I'm not going to be like, hey, how you doing, Justin? Like, it's awkward to insert someone's name into a conversation if it's two people that already know each other. So like, it's funny to me that like, that's already an awkward thing, and that was the weird thing that George didn't write. Like, he already wrote so many other weird awkward things, why not names?
Because it's not important to know the captain.
It's not
names.
Important. Okay, anyway,
it's not important.
Lord Sidious is talking to the Viceroy Gunray, apparently, and the other aliens who are with him from the Trade Federation. I forget exactly what he says, because what I was paying attention to, I want you to know, this is my running theory, and you do not have to respond to this at all, that Lord Sidious is Palpatine, is my current theory. I brought this up in last week's episode, and then I started this episode, and I pressed play on the, like, resume on the movie. And then I was immediately like, oh, wait, there goes that theory, because Lord Sidious doesn't have a beard and Palpatine does have a beard. And I was like, well, there goes that theory. I am mixing up Palpatine with some of the other old council members, because Palpatine actually does not have a beard. So I'll bring that up later. But at this point in my rewatchings, I was like, oh, well, there goes that theory. Lord Sidious has a little butt chin, which I will bring up the butt chin
later on
towards the end of our conversation. And they're just like preparing for this battle. In the trees where the Gungans and the woods and the swamp, they say they're by a swamp, I think. Jar Jar has been made a general. That's a great move.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's key to this battle. It's making Jar Jar a general. I think there's no way.
What do you think about Jar Jar? What do you think? You love him?
I know. I think his reputation for being an annoying character is accurate. I don't think it was nearly bad enough to warrant the backlash that this movie and that the actor got.
Yeah.
And actually, even if it was the most deplorable character ever in the history, even if this was two straight hours of Jar Jar Binks, that still doesn't warrant the backlash that Ahmed Best got. So
for sure. 100%.
No matter what, that's just an inappropriate reaction. But there's no, I'm not going to come on here and be like, no, Jar Jar's great. I love him. He's my favorite character. Like,
here's the thing. Like, if you watch behind the scenes, it's hard because he's doing exactly what George is telling him to do.
Oh, poor guy.
It's like, but he's doing it like to the best of his ability. And it's hard because if someone at that time in your life said you want to be in a Star Wars movie, you would be every kind of robot, alien, whatever they ask you to do. You know?
Of course. You especially like, George hey, Lucas. You want to be in a Star Wars movie? We're bringing it back after, you know, 15, 20 years away. Like, want to be in it. Absolutely. If George Who Lucas says jump, no. You say how high. Yeah.
And he did it to the best of his ability. And I'm not going to sit here and make the Jar Jar defense attorney argument. But it works on kids. It really does.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to hate him. I hated Jar Jar for a long time, but it's like, I think I hated the kid in me that liked Jar Jar.
Oh.
If that makes any sense. Like, oh, that's cringy.
Oh, baby Justin, it's okay.
You know, you can like Jar Jar. You think you're so mature and cool, and Star Wars is about war and stuff, but also there's
and then here's this floppy, silly character, yeah, who steps in poop.
But he wins. Jar Jar wins in the end. He does.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he definitely, his role, especially in this part of the movie, his role is quote unquote comedic relief. At this point, it's not exactly comedic. It's just kind of like, Jar Jar.
Relief.
But like in the battle, he's being goofy and he's being silly and he's there to bring lightness and levity to a literal war, you know? And so, and that's definitely needed in a kid's movie and for kids to enjoy it. So I definitely see why people say he's annoying. I also see why kids loved him, you know?
Okay.
But he is so overwhelmed by this idea that he passes out. He faints. The leaders are all discussing a plan of what's going to happen. The Gungans are going to lead a battle like over in this area outside of the city. And that is a diversion because a team of it's going to be the Jedi and the Queen and then like her guard and all of them. They're going to sneak into the city and they're going to capture the Viceroy and they're going to get the pilots to some fighters to fly out to the Trade Center's, the Trade Federation's ship and, you know, destroy it or whatever. How are they going to sneak into the city? Secret tunnel! Secret tunnel!
See, through it all comes the city.
Oh, man. I don't... yeah, like, what a great plot device. Never fails.
Here's the thing. Everything comes back to Star Wars eventually. I mean, you wouldn't... I think you see a lot of Star Wars in Avatar, too. Not to derail the whole podcast, but, like, it's...
No,
I,
yeah.
It's hard. The Phantom Menace is the genesis for so many things. I think... controversial statement. I think Avatar is almost a rewrite of Star Wars, but that's a whole nother podcast.
Respectfully, Justin, the Phantom Menace did not invent the idea of sneaking into something via a secret tunnel.
I'm not saying it invented it. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that I think the Avatar writers are huge Star Wars fans because the comparisons do not stop there. Oh, no,
actually, that is very true. Because I listened to the Dante Bosco, who's the voice actor for Zuko, and then Janet Varney, who is the voice actor for Korra, have a Avatar podcast. They repeatedly have on the creators and everything, and they always talk about like the references that they, you know, the inspirations and influences that the creators grew up on, and like certain things that like you know, reminded them of other stuff when they were creating the series. So yeah, absolutely. Let's see, secret tunnel, that's right. Okay. Oh, then we have kind of a silly scene where the Trade Federation guys, we just see, we're back inside the palace, and we see the hologram of Lord Sidious, like, bouncing back and forth lightly and moving backwards, and, like, out of, like, it just looked very silly. And then we zoom out, and it's because he's being walked backwards on a droid, yeah. Which is just, like, why do we have to do this conversation while walking?
It's a classic Sorkin. It's a West Wing reference. I'm just kidding. Walk and talk. Come on.
And they're saying that they have found the Gungans and everyone gathering near a swamp, and they're going to deploy forces out there. And they say, do we have your permission? And Lord Sidious goes, wipe them out.
Ooh.
Also, a little bit of Star Wars speciesism, racism going on, because the Viceroy goes refers to them as primitives, which is like, damn.
Interesting. Mm. Well, I sometimes get mad at George Lucas for not making the subtext text, but this is literal text, so don't let anyone ever tell you that Star Wars is going woke. It's always been there. The Empire has always been low-key racist, yeah. You know?
But I mean, but also, like, if we learned anything from Return of the Jedi, it's that primitive technology can win out against, you know, advanced technology. Because, like, we saw the Ewoks absolutely destroy, and take over. We've seen it happen before, and we don't really see it happen this time. They very much luck out.
No comment.
Oh, and we'll okay. Say all right, we'll get there. Forces. They have like all different kinds of like. It's funny because they call them primitives, but they also have these like orbs, these like jelly bomb orbs or something that like destroy technology. So like that's not primitive war fighting resources, whatever. Like that seems pretty cool to me. Also, they have a whole underwater city. Like that's not primitive at all.
But if the only Gungan you ever met was like Jar Jar
Binks. Oh, absolutely.
You'd be like, all right, these guys
we could take them down easy, doing. No problem. And this is definitely so, and then like the tanks come out and like all these droids start like a conveyor belt of them basically start being put out, and they're all like folded up, and the Gungans have this like giant shield that they deploy around them, and the tanks like fire at them and can't get through the shield, and so that's when they like issue these droids, and it's very much like this is man/alien, I guess, versus technology. Like right here, never more apparent than this. Like in this city, this group has now snuck in. They fight their way into the palace, and Qui-Gon is like, Anakin, you, as soon as we get in there, like you find cover and you stay safe. And Anakin's like, sure. Could we not have left him like in the woods, or like was there not somewhere to store this little boy?
The woods is where the Gungan army.
Or more? Are there not other woods? Could we not? I feel like we didn't need to bring him into the city, into the battle. It ends up working out.
Where's he gonna go? Come on, like.
But it's very silly.
It's, of course, he's like a little kid. What is he gonna do? Oh no! like, it's the wide-eyed nature of it all. But still, like, if you're going to be the safest, I mean, I would argue the safest place is next to two Jedi Knights, but hey, that's sure. just me. Like, the only people that can actually shoot and do shit in this whole, like, movie, you know?
Yeah.
The most competent people.
So they run inside the palace. R2 is with them, by the way, and it just always makes me laugh when they're, like, there are these, like, intense scenes and everyone's running everywhere, and then there's just R2.
Slowly just moving.
Rolling along. We stan. I love him.
And there's R2 just rolling along. God bless him.
They get inside the, I guess, like, hangar area where all the ships are, the spaceships. I don't know what they're called. Fighter pilots? No, those are the...
The people. Hangar bay?
Sure, yeah. But, like, what are the vehicles? Like, the ships. Luke drove an X-Wing. What are these called?
Oh, the Naboo Starfighters. I think they're called...
Starfighter. That's the word I'm looking for. That's all that I'm looking for, is a Starfighter. Great. A word for the spaceship, but, like, the individual one that the pilots fly around, you know?
Honestly?
Starfighter.
It's probably the cutest ship in Star Wars, to be honest with you. It looks nice. The yellow.
It's pretty sleek.
It's sleek.
And, which is what's so funny, because then we, like, devolve, you know, let's say 30 years, or no, because Anakin's a baby at this point, you know, 50 years in the future, and we devolve to, like, this clunky X-Wing.
Well, you have to remember, like, this is a ship that is not designed during wartime. You know, and it is designed by a culture that has not faced war.
Is that the reasoning?
Well, this is part of the prequel rehabilitation that I've done. But this is a culture that has not faced war yet. Why are they so bad at this? Why are they, like, so clunky? Or not clunky, but, like, naive when it comes to war? But the Naboo Starfighter example of that, like, this, I think it calls back to almost a chariot-like design that the pod racers also have, of, like, these two engines or two horses that kind of, like, power you through and, like, move you through space. But when we get, like, further through Star Wars, where it's, like, post-war, they're designed for speed, how fast you can get somewhere, how, like, I mean, more engines that could split apart to give you more movement, you know?
Yeah.
You can see, like, the X-Wing design. Not see it, but you can see that this is pre-X-Wing, because the engines don't give you that same maneuverability as the X-Wing.
Gotcha,
mind you,
yeah.
Not a rocket scientist, so the airplane design, people are going to be like, well, actually, this is more aerodynamic design, you know?
Some NASA scientist is going to call us up. Yeah.
That would be cool. Get Neil deGrasse Tyson or somebody out here. That'd be fun.
Oh, my God. Neil deGrasse Tyson, if you listen to this podcast, please write in. We get a Wilhelm scream, by the way. All the, like, the pilots and our guys, they're fighting against these droids. Oh, yeah. So a bunch of the pilots go out and they go into space to, you know, take out the Trade Federation ship. Anakin takes cover inside a cockpit of a starfighter that's just, like, sitting there, and they have, like, fought off all the droids, and they're like, okay, let's go this way, whatever. And then the doors open. Oh! And it's Darth Maul. It was a pretty cool entrance, pretty cool reveal, and it's consistent with the Sith, like, desire to always be dramatic as possible.
this is the moment that changed everything. This exact moment.
Really?
Because, okay, slight history lesson, right? The hype was real for this Star Wars movie, right? And this is also the days of pre-YouTube and pre-putting trailers on the internet. And people lost their literal when a double-bladed lightsaber was ignited. And this was one of the amazing shots in the trailer,
and they,
right?
They definitely, like, give it its moment, because he, like, presses the button and then one side comes up and then there's, like, a slight pause and then he does it on the other side. And you can tell that they were like, we're going to blow these kids' minds.
It is the best, I don't know, saber reveal in all of Star Wars. I don't think the sabers get better than this. That's
pretty cool.
As far as, like, the expansion upon the original lightsaber design, it does, in my opinion, it does not get it better than this. You had people buying tickets for movies that they did not want to see just to see the Star Wars trailer for the first time so they can get another glimpse at the lightsaber. This is when everyone lost their shit. I get it. I understand, because everybody wanted to be Darth Maul and have the red and black paint on their faces and get the double bladed lightsaber because you could do cool flips.
It looks cool. Who wants to be a guy with a rat tail in monk robes?
It's unimpeachable. This moment and that fight between Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, and Maul, I think it's solidly good. You can't even argue with it. You know,
I fully agree with you on that. Yes. And also, at this moment, we get what I think, honestly, kind of ruined things a little bit for me. Because, John Williams bumps it with Duel of the Fates.
On fire.
Dope-ass score. And I've heard this. I've heard this score before. I knew that it was called Duel of the Fates. So when this started playing here, I was not expecting for a song called Duel of the Fates to be in the first movie. I thought it would be the score for the climax of the trilogy, you know? I would not describe the battle that's happening here as a Duel of the Fates. I would say a future battle between Anakin and Obi-Wan would be a Duel of the Fates. Seems more accurate to me. So the hype of knowing the name of this song and hearing it didn't exactly match the level of the battle that was happening here, because we are interspersed with all this other stuff of teams running through palaces and then Anakin being like, oopsie. Justin's holding, I don't know if he's holding back a sneeze or if he's trying not to yell at me.
No, I'm just trying not to spoil anything. Okay, great. But I said this earlier in the pod. This is the most important Star Wars fight in history. is it.
I mean, some pretty monumental things happen. Absolutely.
Do you know who Darth Vader
is? Yes.
Okay, I don't want to spoil anything. I'm being very careful.
Anakin Skywalker becomes Darth Vader. Yes.
Okay.
I am aware of that.
It's the Duel of the Fates, because everything rests, because I think the theme of this particular movie is changing fate and rewriting time, not time, but rewriting history in a weird way, right? This is part of prequel rehabilitation segment again, but if this fight goes any other way, there are
things
so many
don't happen
moments,
the way that they do.
If Obi-Wan gets a clean swing in here, if Qui-Gon dodges here, everything changes. Because I think if Qui-Gon left Anakin on that little desert planet, would the galaxy have changed? Would he have still been evil? I think there's a moment where in the pod racing with what's his name?
Sebulba?
No, not Sebulba.
Watto?
Anakin's owner.
Watto.
Watto. He says, okay, why don't we bet on it or roll some dice on it? If the boy wins, you can keep him. Or they roll some dice. And you could see Qui-Gon says, oh, and the mother too or something like that, right? And then he uses the Force to roll the dice in his favor.
Yeah.
Right? What happens if he just let the Force be the Force? What happens if Qui-Gon doesn't insist that Anakin is the chosen one, right? What happens if Qui-Gon lives instead of Obi-Wan, right? You know, that is the Duel of the Fates. It's not necessarily it is this specific fight, but this specific fight is a reflection on Qui-Gon's inability to let things be, you know, or not to trust his gut instincts, which is right, I guess. Anakin is a being that has great influence over the galaxy, right and wrong, depending on how you look at it or the time period that you're looking at. It's just that, it's the tempting of fate. You know what I'm saying? You know, does that make any sense? I don't know.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I hear what you're saying. So Anakin is in the cockpit, and then they keep getting
attacked by droids. And so he, R2, by the way, has been sucked up into the ship too. So they're like piloting it together. And Anakin basically plays like an arcade shooter game at this point with the starfighter and like shoots him down. But then the autopilot has been engaged and it ships him out to space. and there just happens to be a perfectly child-sized helmet in the ship.
Yeah.
And my friends tried to try. Or maybe just
Naboo people have small heads.
Maybe. My friends tried to tell me, oh no, they'll cut back and you'll see it's actually really big on him. No, it fits him pretty well.
Why? I also
like that they were like, oh, but he has to put on his helmet. Like a nice little safety first. Like a little PSA to the kids out there. Always ride with your helmet on.
Especially when you're killing droids in the Trade Federation. Right.
Well, I guess we're sending this child out into battle.
Oh, well.
Let me put on my helmet. Safety first. Good thing they have this child-sized helmet.
So they go out to space where the rest of the fighter pilots are. By the way, we get a woman pilot? No. What?
There has to be one before this, right? No. Or am I just misremembering it again?
No, there's no. Really? There might be one in Return of the Jedi. I don't remember. I'll have to go back and look. But it's just funny to me because it's like, oh, that means we get a little bit sexist in the future of this universe that we only have male pilots.
Technically, yeah. Well, no comment.
You don't have to comment on it. It's fine. So this is when we have like four separate stories going on all at the same time, and it's bouncing back and forth between them. So we're just going to talk through like one at a time. So on the Gungan side, they're fighting against the droids, which have all been activated at this time. And they still have their shield, the like giant like shield bubble, and the droids just walk through it. And it's like,
oh no, inorganic material.
That went differently in my head. And so, like, you know, the battle's on. We see so many Jar Jar antics in this sequence.
Do anything right! Oh my god.
He's doing great!
He, like, takes a droid down and then, like, kicks him to be like, yeah, he, like, curb stomps him, this droid, yeah. And is like, yeah, that'll show you. And then, like, his foot gets caught, and he's trying to shake it off, and then the gun from the droid is still shooting off, and it, like, accidentally shoots a couple droids. How many Gungans do you think were killed by Jar Jar Binks accidentally in this battle? Because I think it was
George
a lot.
Lucas, he's going to say zero, but because there's a theory. Do you think Jar Jar is a secret force user?
No, absolutely not.
There is a very popular theory that, like, because Jar Jar is, what's the word I'm looking for? So clumsy, it's almost as if the force is pushing him in the right direction. And there's a whole nother theory where he's like a Sith Lord and everything, but not real. That's not canon. Don't worry about it.
Sometimes silly Gungans are just silly Gungans.
No comment.
What else happens with the... He gets, like, flown up in the air at one point and lands on top of a tank. And the other, like, main leader commander is like, Yusa Abomben, or whatever he says. And they toss him up a bomb that he, like, and, like, doesn't catch it. And it just, and then a droid pops up out of the center of the tank, and the bomb, like, hits that one. And then the tank goes haywire and, like, takes out a bunch of, you know, droids and part of the army. So Jar Jar is able to do some damage to the bad guys, And I think the Gungans are putting up a pretty good fight, but the droids are pretty intense. And at one point, Jar Jar and then this other commander are surrounded, and the other guy is like, don't give up yet. We'll think of something. And then the droid goes, give up now. And Jar Jar goes, me give up. Like immediately.
Instantly, like, dang.
Jar Jar knew. And you know what? In that moment, I respect it. The ability to understand like what your limitations in battle are. And Jar Jar was like, I can't. I give up. I surrender. That we'll pause on the Gungan fight battle, and we'll come back to that in a second. So the next side of the story is Padme and her guard and everyone who are trying to go up to the throne room and capture the Viceroy. And earlier, by the way, when they were like making the plans, Qui-Gon was like, I don't know, like this seems pretty like, if we fail, if the Viceroy escapes, he's going to come back with a bigger army of droids and then we're all done. And Padme was like, well, that's why we can't let him escape. And it's like, that's a pretty, I like your can-do attitude, Padme, but let's also like maybe have like a backup plan if things start going wrong.
That is the backup plan at that point.
The backup plan is we can't let this fail. There's lots of like battling in like giant like tiled halls with like ginormous columns. They're all fighting with droids. At one point they go like a window breaks and they go outside and they go ascension guns and they shoot their claw, their grappling hook guns up and go up a... It's just so silly to me because it's such a it's such a specific tool to have on your like utility belt thing. And like, I wonder how often those actually get used. And if in that moment, the guy who like suggested that they include that in their like arsenal of weapons, in that moment, he's like, yes, my time has come. We're finally using the ascension guns.
I mean, okay. Another point in these are pre-war people who don't use, I guess, I don't know, good guns in this particular section of the universe, right? But also, I think it's very silly, but I don't think it's sillier than, like, anything that happens in Return of the Jedi.
Sure. Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, especially that movie where the stunts are, like, you gotta squint a little bit to make it, like, work, you know? But, all right.
Okay. I don't know. I think the Ewoks smushing a stormtrooper with two trees.
No, I'm talking about like when Luke does that like backflip onto another thing, grabs his sword. You know, it's like, okay, all right, come on, you little show off, come on.
They're fighting, they're making their way towards the throne room, but then they're surrounded, and Padme orders them to surrender, and she's like, we've lost this battle, we'll win another one or whatever. So they put their weapons down, and they are escorted into the throne room where the Viceroy is. And they're chatting, and then another group shows up on the other side of the hallway, and it's the queen, the decoy queen. They're like, surrender now, Vice, whatever. They say something. The Viceroy goes, this one's a decoy, after her. And so they send a bunch of people after the decoy queen. And this was when I was like, wait a minute.
How many decoys are there gonna be?
Is this at, was she, I'm like, wait, is this one actually a decoy or is that a decoy fake out? It was a decoy fake out in that when he pointed at Padme and said, this one's a decoy, that is actually, because I had to stop and look and be like, is that actually Keira Knightley or is that actually Natalie Portman?
It's actually a good plan.
A bunch of the droids run off after the fake queen. And then, you know, you keep saying that this is a society that hasn't had war yet. But the queen, Padme, presses like a button on her throne. And it opens up a secret compartment that has guns in it. How is that? Like, that definitely...
When I say
that
they haven't had war yet, I think they have gone a long time without a war.
Okay.
You know, it's like they are softened.
I don't know. Softened. I don't think she's softened if they have guns in her throne.
I mean, it's part of the decoy like plan. Like, what if the decoy queen needs a gun to protect the princess, you know? Like, that's a part of the decoy shtick, okay. You know?
So she takes out two of the guns and they take out the rest of the droids in the room and like close it off and, you know, capture the Viceroy. So yay, that part went well. That part of the plan worked. Up in space now, we're with Anakin. He's like, R2, get us off autopilot. And the autopilot has taken them to the Trade Federation ship. And they go like zooming inside and come to like a screeching halt inside a hangar. And the ship has like overheated. R2 is being like, we gotta go back. And Anakin says, Qui-Gon told me to stay in this cockpit, so that's what I'm doing. So this little 8-year-old is now fighting for us.
I mean, did he lie? Did he lie?
Yeah, he didn't lie. He didn't lie. The ship comes back, like he gets it back working again, and he starts shooting the droids that are attacking him, and he misses one, and it like blows up like a reactor or a something. It blows up an engine. I don't know what it blows up in the
interesting.
Ship.
Interesting. A port so small that nobody could get to it. And one Skywalker pilot shoots it and takes down the whole thing. I wonder where I've seen that before. It's like poetry. It rhymes. It's the whole point of Star Wars. You see,
except I believe when Anakin does it, he goes, oops.
I mean, first time. Whereas
Luke was very intentionally knew what he was doing. And Anakin is just, and I can't fault him for this. He's just a little boy in a spaceship having a good time.
That's how you know he's the chosen one. Lisan al Gaib. He did it as an accident. It still happened. The prophecy is written.
I think this is some of Jake Lloyd's better acting in the movie, is the sequence when he's fighting, because he's very enthusiastic about what's going on. He's very like dedicated to it. We see like a lot more emotion and like vocal inflection happening with the lines that he's delivering here, like when he's talking to R2. Oh, by the way, R2, did it never cross your mind to bring up to Luke, hey, I once fought with your dad when he was a baby boy?
That question is answered in another
movie. Ooh. Okay, I like that.
But I will say, it's not really a spoiler. I mean, there's a reason why.
I like that. Tell. I like that.
But that's a whole other thing.
I like that. But I do kind of, at this point in my head, I'm kind of imagining that like Luke finds this out one day and is like, R2, why didn't you tell me? And R2's like, I mean, you never asked, so.
I guess so. I mean, you're not wrong.
R2.
But no comment. No comment.
And so like the whole ship starts blowing up and everyone's like, it's blowing up from the inside. Did we, like the other pilots are like, we didn't do that, did we? I love this. And then Anakin goes to escape and he goes, now this is pod racing. Now this is pod
racing. One of the single most quotable, I say that in my real life to this day. Whenever I do something that's not that cool or not that amazing, I'm like, now this is pod racing. Like I take all the groceries from the car to my house in one trip. Now this is pod racing. Like, come on. It's a good one. It's a good bit.
I would also like to point out that that was a line that was proposed to me as a name for the podcast. Now this is podcasting. And I was like, that's cool, but I don't understand the reference.
Oh, no. Okay.
Because I hadn't watched anything yet. I was like, I don't know what that's referencing to. I don't know what it's a play on. I don't know. And people are trying to explain it to me. And I'm like, what do you want me to do? So like Anakin escapes and they blow up the ship. And it's kind of like, boy, if I had a nickel for every time we dramatically blew up a ship in a Star Wars franchise, I'd have 3 nickels. Which isn't a lot, but it's weird that it's happened 3 times now.
It's and I'm poetry. Assuming
it's going to happen a lot more.
No
Look,
comment.
Blowing up, dramatically blowing up a spaceship is like not, like I will not be surprised if I see more of that. And also like, it's a cool explosion. It looks cool. It's a fun way to end it, to end the battle and everything. Very dramatic, you know, can't necessarily go wrong with a big flashy explosion. Okay, and then now to the part that we really want to talk about. The Gungans giving Jar Jar... No, I'm just kidding. the supposed duel of the fates.
Yes.
Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and Darth Maul are all fighting. And they go into this, which I don't understand, like, what this section of the palace is that they're in, because it looks more like the inside of one of the spaceships. And I had to remind myself that they're in a palace on land, on a planet, and they're in, they all of a sudden enter this, it's like a giant, like, I would say, like, a control room or an engine room, but, like, what... It's a building. Maybe it's connected to the hangar. So I could see that it's like, it maybe it's like connected to like building the, you know, and maintaining the ships and like all that stuff. But like, what is this room? Because they walk in. It's an OSHA nightmare, by the way.
OSHA nightmare.
There are no guardrails on any of these catwalks.
I mean, yes, that's a very common thing in Star Wars, weirdly. Is that there's no guardrails on things.
No, people I mean, follow. Yeah. It makes for a more exciting fight. Absolutely. And like, but like, this is again where I'm like, where are they? Because when they fall off the sides, if they could just fall into like a void, into nothing. Spoiler alert, that happens with Darth Maul. Where did he go? Where did he go? Because they are on a planet.
This might be wrong. And I'm relying on my like knowledge of it. These are what is powering the planet. These are light pillars, right? So, okay. Like, don't run into them. You're going to get, like, disintegrated.
Sure.
Right? It's almost as if, like, these... If you're in, like, the deep bowels of, like, what's it called? The furnace equivalent of the Star Wars equivalent of a furnace room.
Okay.
You know?
It's just weird because it's, like, how did we enter this, like, liminal... This, like, alternate dimension? Like, we were previously... Cool. We were in this hangar, and then we unlocked a door, and we're just in this, like, nuclear power plant all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Okay, enough about that. Whatever. It's a cool battle. The end.
No!
Thanks for coming on, Justin.
What? No!
No, I mean, like, it's very cool. We got Duel of the Fates going. Choral arrangements are coming in. You know, operatic singing. Lots of jumping back and forth between, like, platforms. Darth Maul, you know, he has this, like, double-sided thing, so he's... Whoosh, 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 whoosh. Gotta say, the fight choreography, which I think is also just, like, something that naturally happened with the movie industry, like, over time, that the concept of, like, fight choreography definitely became more of a thing. And being like, oh, we can make our fight scenes look really cool, because when you compare this with like Luke and Vader at the end of Return of the Jedi, which is just like boom, boom, like it looks like leaps and bounds. This is so much more captivating to watch. Like there's just so much more going on. There's so much action. There's so much. It just looks. It's real cool.
Okay, multiple reasons why that's so cool, right? In universe. This is the Jedi Order at the height of its power. This is when they were in most touch with the Force. It is the strongest of their capabilities, you know, is around this movie. Mind you, there's a whole lot of stuff that they don't see in the background that you'll get to in another movie. But it is what George Lucas thought Jedi should be for the longest time. How they would move, how they would like act and stuff like that. These knights. There's another Star Wars director named Dave Filoni, right? And he talks about like what George Lucas talked to him about what Jedi represent and what they're supposed to do. And this movie is this beginning of the end of the idea of what a Jedi should be. And you can kind of see that in like Luke Skywalker, right? In that a Jedi would come for peace. Not even reach for their sword at the first time, right? They maybe might put it on a table so they can, that you know that that is not an option, you know? Like, they are one with the Force. They are, like, seeing how it bends their lives together. And this is the start of the end of that. Number one, with Qui-Gon, like, tempting fate, changing the dice roll, bringing Anakin when he's too old to be a Padawan, you know, bending the rules of fate when you're not supposed to, right? And so you have Jedi facing a Sith, and they're that higher the power. So they're flipping, they're in touch with the Force, they're doing all this stuff and like being cool. And yet Obi-Wan is still reckless in this fight. I think there's a fun moment where Obi-Wan kind of pump fakes Darth Maul for a hot second. It's like, oh, that's a very almost modern move in the Star Wars universe, you know, with like the ducks and stuff like that. And I think what is special about this fight is that, how do I say this without spoiling? I'm trying to think of a word. Is that it goes the way it does because of Qui-Gon as a character and as Obi-Wan as a character. There's a, remember the force field wall, you know?
So, like, okay. Let's talk about that. Do you not like that.
The force field wall?
I don't understand what the, I'm more kind of looking at it from, okay. Yeah. So there's a moment where Obi-Wan gets like knocked off the edge and he goes like flying and, you know, dangles around the, he grabs onto the edge of one. And then Obi-Wan and Darth Maul, no. Qui-Gon and Darth Maul go like running off, and then Obi-Wan like launches, does the dumb force jumping. I'm sorry, Justin.
You don't like the force jumping. Interesting.
There are certain things that I just don't like about the force, and that they're just kind of like, oh yeah, they can do this now. Why? I don't know. The force. The force lets them do this.
It and is like, is the Jedi at the height of their power? Keep in mind, they have all the text. They've went to Jedi school. Jedi school is really good.
No, but this is something that even Luke did. He did force jumping.
Yeah. If the force can grab you a lightsaber, why can't it just lift you off the ground for like a hot second? Give you a little boost. Come on.
Okay. Anyway, they go running down this hallway that has these like, have you ever been to a Kroger frozen food section? Where the lights are motion activated. And I kid you not, this is what my friends and I did in high school.
Gosh dang it. I could just see Minnie Mary play.
I'm just laughing because like I cannot emphasize enough to like, I mean, like I had very like, I had great friends in high school. We had so much fun. Mm-hmm. Like I there was never an ounce of me that was like, oh, I wish I was cooler. I wish I was out with the cool kids partying and drinking and smoking.
Because you were the cool kids. Like,
and this is an example of like what my friends and I do is we would go to Kroger late at night when like not that many people would be there, but it was still open. And we would wait for all the lights to go off in one of the frozen food aisles. And then we would run down it and the lights would turn on as you run down the aisle.
What a troublemaker. What a troublemaker. Breaking the rules, running the grocery stores.
So that is what this hallway is, where all of the, it's like one by one, these like force fields come on. And I'm like, what's the point of this hallway? What is it? Like, what is in this room? I was like, oh, maybe there's something in this room that they get to that's like super important. And that's why this, it definitely is just like the, why was this designed this way?
Because the reactor, you don't want people to go there. You don't want people to go in there and like mess it up and stuff, you know?
But like, so it's like very easy to get in there. All you have to do is stop and wait for it to go down and then keep going forward.
But sometimes, like you don't want people, like I think people who aren't of that culture would get almost confused by it, you know? Like, okay, in the force field.
But moment, you can stop and see the pattern. Like, you see the pattern. It's not going to catch you by surprise.
Well, maybe it's the stop mass armies coming in and shooting the reactor, you know? You have an added measure of defense, you know? You can, like, stop.
Maybe. Time. I guess.
Shoot. See, there's a reason.
I think it's a very weak reason. I think this was designed by someone who's like, one day, two Jedi and a Sith walk into a bar and these Jedi are going to have a dope battle and it's going to reach a climax and they will need this hallway. Because they need to be dramatic.
But it tells you about the characters. It tells you about the characters. It's not dramatic, you know? Because, like the force fields go up, right?
What do you mean it's not dramatic? Okay, yeah. So they're all running down the hallway.
I'm saying that it's a character reason. It tells you all their reactions tell you about the characters themselves. I guess, yes. Right? And why they made the decisions.
They're all separated. They're all in their own little separate compartments. They all, like, turn their lightsabers off. Actually, I don't think Obi-Wan does. I think he keeps his lightsaber on and he's still just, like, watching them. Obi-Wan's a little bit further behind. And Qui-Gon goes down on his knees and, like, meditates for a second. I don't think the force fields stay up for a long enough time for them to be able to do this, because before they enter the hallway, we see them going up and down pretty intermittently, like in the background. And they're never up for that long. So this was kind of just like a little bit of like dramatic tension. And then you see them slowly go down one by one. And then the one separating Darth Maul and Qui-Gon goes down. And so they resume their battle and they go into this, you know, like reactor room, whatever it is, that has a giant hole in the middle. Again, ocean nightmare. No guardrails.
None. Who needs them?
And Obi-Wan is, he's like standing there, like ready to go, waiting, watching the force fields in front of him go down and down and down. And then he runs forward and is cut off at just the first one goes up again right as he reaches it. So he is now standing there watching this battle happen between Qui-Gon and Darth Maul. And if you've watched A New Hope, I would say even if you hadn't watched A New Hope, I feel like the writing is on the wall. It seems to definitely be, I think like there's a good assumption to be made here that Qui-Gon is going to be killed. Because he is, you know, the master, his student is standing there helpless, watching it all happen. And that's exactly what happens. Darth Maul, like, punches him, and his like, head goes up, and he goes like, oh, and then Darth Maul shish kebabs him with the lightsaber. No! Oh, it went through him!
Hell of a
and,
move.
Like, you see, this is a departure from the original trilogy where like you never really see anyone get hit with a lightsaber. You don't really see death. You don't see blood. You don't see gore, really. You just kind of like, it just kind of like happens.
I mean, Luke got his hand chopped off.
Yeah, but we don't see, I mean, well, then again, it cauterized it immediately, so you don't see blood. But I'm trying to remember, I don't really think like, I think even after his hand is chopped off, he kind of like keeps
you also,
it.
The Obi-Wan cuts a hand off in the bar in Tatooine, and you okay, do you see do blood.
Okay,
in that.
Whatever. Point being,
yeah.
Okay, like when Obi-Wan dies at the hands of Darth Vader, you don't see the lightsaber hit him. You see it approach him, and then you hear Luke go "No!" and then you like have a close up of Obi-Wan's face. And then he, you know, like, disappears. And it's just like, okay, he died. You don't see the moment. Point being, in this moment, you do see the lightsaber through. Like, you see it going out the other side of Qui-Gon. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. like, that's a big deal, I think, that they're like, showing that.
Very big deal. Very big deal.
And Obi-Wan, screams, no! Just like Luke. A little less whiny than Luke did.
What? Okay, here's the thing. Before this happens, right, you see Darth Maul, like, pacing like a cat in the force field, right? Like, he is ready for combat, ready to go, right? And Obi-Wan's kind of the same way, right? And then Qui-Gon sits down, meditates, communes with the force. I think this is the fatal flaw, which leads to this, right? Is that, in the end, Qui-Gon is so, in my opinion, he's caught up in the old Jedi ways of maybe I can not force my way, but like think of my way out of this, or like meditate and think of a reason how we can succeed in this moment. And it doesn't work because Darth Maul is there to kill. I mean, he's there to play in a way that we haven't seen in Star Wars before. Yeah. With a deadly intent. Even the Emperor likes to toy with his food for every now and then. You know what I mean? Even Darth Vader wouldn't negotiate with like Luke Skywalker. Darth Maul does not negotiate. He barely has a line in this movie. You know what I mean? And so when Darth Maul does like the handle to the face, boom, bop, pow, I don't think Qui-Gon, keep in mind these are Jedi, even though they are at their most powerful, they are a Jedi that has not faced a Sith in centuries.
Yeah.
They have not fought with this kind of intensity or dirtiness ever. And Qui-Gon relying on his old Jedi ways is what kills him, you know? And I think you'll see this in previous, or not previous, but next installments, is that as the Jedi have to adapt to this new normal of facing Sith and fighting this war, they lose the core of what a Jedi actually is. And this is the beginning of this. And this is why it's called Duel of the Fates, you know? And so Obi-Wan comes in, and how does he win? With a dirty trick. He wins with a dirty trick, you know? Darth Maul kicks him over the ledge. He loses his lightsaber. And this is, remember this
move. I want to point out that Darth Maul, you know, Obi-Wan's like hanging inside the thing. Darth Maul is like hitting his lightsaber to like send sparks down over to where Obi-Wan is hanging.
It's not a fun time to fight Darth Maul, but especially now. But this is probably the most important move in Star Wars. Remember this move. Obi-Wan uses the Force to jump over Darth Maul, and Darth Maul, looking over him, being dumb, leaves himself over to attack and just...
And he gets the also, final. Obi-Wan, he uses the Force to get... Because he drops his lightsaber in the thing, whatever. Yeah. And he uses the Force to get Qui-Gon's lightsaber. And you see him slice at him and Darth Maul... And then it's a close-up of Darth Maul's face, and you see him be like, oh! And then he stumbles backwards. And that, I would say, is more... similar to like what we see pretty similar to what we see in the original trilogy whenever like someone is killed, like you just see the action and then like a close-up of their face or like their body falls, then he falls into the thing and his body splits. It like you see the two parts of his body that were severed and they fall. I screamed, I lost my mind. I was like, damn. Epic. They went there. They showed it.
With what? Oh, not the Force jumping! Oh!
Yeah, was that like a red spray?
Yeah,
red?
Definitely. Whoa! Damn.
It is the most important move. Lightsaber move in Star Wars history. We will see this move again and again and again. The echoes of this moment.
The severing in half. Fight.
Not the severing in half, the flip to cause the severing in half. I will not spoil anything, but it's important. Okay.
Okay. Also super interesting because I thought Darth Maul was going to be like more of a present like antagonist in the prequel trilogy, and he's dead. So I guess we'll find more people in the future to fight against.
Yeah. Okay. So how do you feel about Darth Maul as a character?
Honestly, it's kind of similar to Boba Fett, where I've heard so much about these characters, and then I watch them play out in the movie, and I'm like, they're not there for that long. They don't do that much. We don't see them that much, and then they're killed. So,
yep.
I don't know how that's my opinion. I don't really have much of one. He was a cool villain, very a flair for the dramatic, as we appreciate. Dope ass lightsaber, makeup on point, contouring, amazing.
I think that Star Wars fans love a good design. If you have a good design, you could have 2 seconds of screen time and Star Wars fans will love you.
Yeah.
They will be like, this is the best character ever created.
Yeah. So Obi-Wan goes over to Qui-Gon, who is still alive somehow. Alive, like, just long enough, you know, to deliver some last words to say that Anakin is the chosen one. You know, trust him. He will bring balance. He will restore balance. You, like, train him. And Obi-Wan says, like, yes, I will train him, of course. And then Qui-Gon dies. So this is super interesting to me because my impression of Obi-Wan and Anakin from the original trilogy was that they were more like... maybe like Jedi classmates, or that they were that like they went through like training together, or that they grew up together. And then like slowly, like, you know, as they became like actual Jedi, that they had like gone into like different territories and been exposed to different things. And then this rift happened where one day like Obi-Wan is forced to confront who was like previously his friend. And so now I'm like, oh, Obi-Wan was his apprentice,
And he, in a way, failed Darth Vader, failed Anakin, and failed, you know, the Jedi, because he failed to prevent, you know, what Anakin eventually turns into. So I'm really interested
Let's put a pin on that.
Yeah.
For later.
Just interested to see, like, it's a different dynamic than I was expecting. So I'm interested to see that play out.
Do you think, well, at this current moment of your Star Wars knowledge, do you think it would have been different if Qui-Gon was alive?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Because I think Qui-Gon had, like, he seemingly had a soft spot for Anakin. And that could potentially be pretty bad. And he potentially could have been, you know, more forgiving of things that Anakin does later on. I don't know what Anakin does, but I mean, he eventually becomes, you know, a robot man and evil.
Interesting. No comment. No comment.
Okay. So, I don't know. So, with the ship, the Trade Federation blown up, all of the droids, deactivate and, like, break down, and the Gungans are like, we win! Yay! I love how they all celebrate, because they all jump up and down, and they're, like, flapping their arms around, and we've really only seen Jar Jar be like excited, you know, and you're kind of like, oh, Jar Jar, silly. But then it zooms out and you see, oh no, this is how all the Gungans celebrate. And
Jar Jar is normal. I think that we'll never see Gungans again in Star Wars, which is kind of sad.
Really? Because okay. I think I've heard that we don't see Jar Jar as much in the other movies. And I can understand how, after this movie came out and the reactions to Jar Jar, I can understand George and, like, other producers and people being like, hey, for these next ones, we cannot put this character in again.
He shows up again, and I think you'll be surprised when you see him again.
Oh, my God. Also. Oh, my God. He is Jar Darth Vader. Does not die. He's a Jedi. He is Anakin Skywalker.
He's not a Jedi. He's just no comment. No comment.
He raises Leia.
No comment.
He runs the orphanage that Luke and Leia grew up in.
You know what? No comment.
Okay. They ship the Viceroy off, I think, back to Coruscant, maybe, and they're like, let's see you not sign that. I forget what they say. But basically, they're, you know, forcing the Trade Federation to, I don't know, dissolve or, I don't know,
no.
Quit. I don't know.
Do you agree with the Trade Federation at this point?
Here, look, I'm going to be honest, Justin. I don't give one ounce of thought to, like, the literal politics in this
fair
movie.
Enough, fair
My
enough.
Brain... just go smooth. Anytime. Anytime treaties or taxes or federations are brought up.
Okay, yeah. A lot of people agree with you. That's not what they're here to
say. Why do you think I can't remember what it is that they tell, like, the Viceroy? Because when they capture him, she says, like, now let's renegotiate that treaty. So, you know, clearly they've come up with some kind of agreement that where Naboo is going to be more powerful and more in control than they were previously. So, the end. I don't know.
You were
whatever.
So excited to talk about taxes.
Point being, what happens is Palpatine walks off the ship, and this is when I cheered and was so excited, because Palpatine does not have a beard, and actually he has a little butt chin. Very similar to that of Lord Sidious. So this is when I was like, the theory is back on. Obi-Wan and Anakin greet him, and they're like, oh, we owe this victory to you guys. Thank you so much. Young Skywalker, I'm excited to, like, we'll keep an eye on your career. And I'm like, you sure will, Palpatine. You
I
sure will.
I will not confirm or deny the existence of Lord
anything.
Sidious or Palpatine.
The existence. Let's see. And then I don't even, I literally don't even remember what he says to the queen at this point, because all I was focused on was staring at his chin and comparing it to that of Lord Sidious.
He's just like something like, together we will bring peace to the Republic, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. So they have a funeral pyre for Qui-Gon. Why does Qui-Gon not disappear?
Because he died.
Oh, but no, but Obi-Wan disappeared when he dies.
No. Okay.
What do you mean no? Don't you say no? His body evaporates, okay, and his clothes fall into a puddle on the ground.
I could tell you this because it's not a spoiler, right? It's not a spoiler. You've seen it, right? Obi-Wan disappears because he becomes one with the Force. Obi-Wan does not.
And Qui-Gon doesn't die. Do that?
No.
Why? Well,
Obi-Wan, he sees Luke, right? And he needs to buy some time. He's fighting off Darth Vader, right? And in his head, mind you, this is part of prequel rehabilitation. Years and years of Star Wars, like, lore being created by other things, right? Obi-Wan then thinks or knows that if he dies, he cannot further train Luke. He cannot further advise Luke, right? He knows that the story goes on with Luke, not with me, right? So he turns off his lightsaber. And at that moment, he is ready to face his fate, right? He is ready to become one with the destiny that is presented to him, that is going to be it. And that is when he becomes one with the Force, right? And so there is no body, because his body is becoming one with the Force. And so it looks like he dies. No, he disappeared. Like, you think the lightsaber, like, dissolved people. That's not what's happening, right? But you see him become a Force ghost in later movies, right? And he'd be like, I told you the truth about your father, da-da-da-da, right? In this case, Qui-Gon, who was also studying to become one with the Force or learning new ways about the Force, dies. He dies before he can, like, I don't know, with the punch to the face, he dies. There's no, like, becoming one. So there is a physical body there. There are people in later installments, television and movies, that become one with the Force and there's no body, or die and then become one with the Force, right? So unfortunately, Qui-Gon has died right here.
So this is like an intentional choice that they have to make, where they're like, I want to become one with the Force, or is it just like an inevitability that they will become one with the Force at some point?
Theoretically, the Force is what penetrates us and binds us all together.
Excuse
right?
you? So, penetrates who?
That's the line in the movie, right? When you die, theoretically, you become one with the Force, right? Theoretically. But to become a Force ghost, per se, it is not an intentional choice within death. It is something that needs to be read and trained about, right? So okay. Not everyone can become a Force ghost, okay, per se. If you know the knowledge on how to become a Force ghost and you've studied that Force or the Force enough, you can become a Force ghost before you die, or when you die, you can then come back as a Force ghost. Does that make sense? Okay. So in that moment, Qui-Gon has died. He's dead.
Okay. Qui-Gon, you know, be dead. He's dead.
The question
dead.
Is whether you'll find okay. out.
The question is, you'll find out.
You'll find out, okay.
So, his body is being burned in front of them. You know, they're having this funeral. Anakin asks what will become. He says, what will happen to me? And Obi-Wan says that you will become a Jedi and we'll train you. Yoda, and I don't know Samuel Jackson's character name.
Mace Windu.
Okay, that is surely not a name that they say in this movie.
They have to have said it.
They don't.
They have to.
They don't. They
There's
never.
There's no way. Someone no. pull up the scripts. Pull up the receipts.
They do not ever say anyone's names. And like, all it would take in those council meetings is being like, Counselor, what's his name? Mace Windu?
Master Windu.
Windu? Okay, whatever.
I'm pretty sure they said his name. Listeners, pull up the receipts. Pull up the receipts.
Like, all it would take is being like, Master Windu, what are your thoughts on this? Bam. We have a character name. Instead, okay. I'm just like, it's Yoda and Samuel Jackson.
Okay, if you're right, I will Venmo you money for lunch whatever you want. But if I'm right, I want money for lunch.
Okay, but here's the thing, Justin, is I am not going to go back and rewatch this movie to find out if they say
his name. The listeners will. Listeners, prove me right.
Okay, listeners, all right. Justin and I are going to, this is a monetary bet. Do they say Samuel Mace Jackson's character name in this movie?
Yes.
And I don't like a deleted scene doesn't count. A behind the scenes, a cut scene, extended, none of that counts. In the version on Disney Plus, which is what I would argue the majority of people watch nowadays, you know?
Yeah.
Do they say Samuel Jackson's character's name?
Okay. Okay. If they don't, I'll buy you lunch.
Let us know. Let us know.
Okay.
So, they are saying wherever there is a Sith, there is another. Never more, never less. They say there's always two of them. So apparently it's like Noah's Ark. They always exist in pairs.
Can I give you the canon explanation for it? This is the first introduction of the rule of two, right? So, you know how like the balance of the Force, right? There's like at this point in time in the world, right? There are a lot of Jedi doing good Force things, right? So the Force has to balance it out, right? With the rise of evil, right? Before this movie, there was a bunch of Sith and a bunch of Jedi, right? But because Sith are evil and assholes, they kept killing each other. And then one guy who doesn't show up in the movies, but one guy was like, hey, there's a bunch of them, right? And there's a bunch of us, right? The Force has to balance itself out, right? So if there's less of us, the less of us get more chunk of the Force power. So if there's only two of us, we're going to be exceptionally powerful. And plus, there's only two of us. I will kill you. You kill me, right? So a master is formed. And he trains a person to become like the Sith master of the Force, whatever it's called. Mind you, I'm saying this in very plain terms. I'm not using good canon terminology, right? That being said, the cycle of Sith continues. The apprentice betrays the master then gets a new apprentice, and that cycle continues, and they get to be very powerful users of dark force energy, whatever it's called.
Because there's only two of them.
Dark side. There's only two of them, right? And by that extension, Jedi have like almost, I don't know, they are bound to lose because the scales are going to even out at some point, right? It's the will of the Force will always balance.
Okay, but to me that sounds like the Force is a finite resource.
It's not a finite resource.
Why are the Sith like? Oh well, if there's only two of us, we can have more share of the Force.
Don't think of it. I probably worded it badly, but don't think of it as shares. Think of it as the Force will balance itself out. So if there's more light side in the universe, we will grow more powerful as dark side, right? And at the height of the dark side force power, or evilness in the universe, the rise of good will come out, right? It will always be this balance of like good and then darkness rising, right? And so the Force will correct itself in all of these movies, or eventually, right? So at the height of Darth Vader and the Emperor, right? Somehow, some way, a droid, R2-D2 and C-3PO land on the right planet to find the right lost orphan in time that he could connect with the only Jedi in the universe who happens to be on the same planet. That is the Force getting someone good to correct itself with all the bad in the universe, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
That make any sense? And so, once you know that, you'll know how every trilogy or fight in the universe is going to end, you know, because it's always going to balance itself out, right?
Okay, point is, in this conversation, Yoda and Samuel Jackson say, they're like, okay, there's always a master and apprentice. So that begs the question, which was destroyed, the master or the apprentice? And then the camera cuts to, well, it's a shot of everyone on the other side of the room reacting to it, the funeral, but the camera focuses on Palpatine immediately after this line about which was destroyed, the master or the apprentice. So I'm just saying, I think my theory about Palpatine being Lord Sidious seems pretty accurate. Can't wait to find out. I feel so, I actually, at this point, I feel like I pretty hesitantly made this prediction in last week's episode and was like, I understand this is kind of crazy and out there and outlandish and it's probably... No, I'm going to double down on this one. I feel so confident.
Here's the thing. Also, in that shot is R2-D2 and Jar Jar. Who
but here's
could
the thing.
It be?
If R2 was a Sith Lord, I will shell out my entire life to George Lucas, because that seems right, like the okay. dopest story that all could right. ever be told is R2-D2 as a Sith Lord. I think that's amazing. I think our universe would be better, actually. So the funeral's over and now we can celebrate. Yay. The Gungans have a dope ass drumline.
Good. Actually good. They're talented.
There's a huge parade. Everyone's celebrating. People are throwing like flower petals and confetti in the air. We see Anakin has a little buzz cut and a rat tail. He's in his, you know, he's training as a Jedi now and his silly haircut.
I will say there's a shot of him like smirking. That shot will forever be etched in my brain because it's just like, come on, George, let him make a better face than that. Because it's just very comical of like, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm a Jedi now.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, okay, all right. It. Chill, dude.
I think he's a little cutie patootie. Let's see. What else? I was trying to pay attention to the handmaidens in the background to be like, Keira Knightley, where are you? And I think we could see her, like, distantly, like, over the shoulder, like, over someone's shoulder for, like, a split second, you know?
So is that Natalie Portman now, or is it not? I'm never going to trust it.
Boss Nass walks up and, you know, like, accepts this award from, I think Palpatine gives it to him, and they're like, and now we usher in an era of peace. You're shaking your head.
It's just some random old guy.
Oh, it's a random old guy. Okay, see, they need to do more to distinguish their old guys. They all look the same.
Fair. You know what would really help with that? If they just, like, cast a person of color. Maybe a couple more sprinkled throughout, you know? Just saying. Just
if they weren't all old white men. If there was
like,
one
no one's
old
getting
black guy.
Me and Palpatine confused. I'm just saying. Like, I can help you out, George.
You're right. I will say, you know who I'm very confident in recognizing in this movie? Samuel L. Jackson.
Exactly.
I will never confuse him for any of the old guys, never. Any of the old white men. You're correct in that. The reward, by the way, is this, like, orb? This, like, light orb?
It's peace in an orb.
It's the representation of peace.
Yes. They probably took it from that light room. The light
pillar.
Everyone's
cheering. Yay. The queen looks over at Anakin and smiles. And then I think he does, like, his little smirk back or smiles back. And then the movie mm-hmm. ends.
That's it.
That's how the movie ends.
Yeah, that's how the movie ends. But also, did you notice anything about the music in this movie?
No.
If you listen to the celebration music at the end of episode one, okay. right? Just slow it down a little bit and tell me what you hear. Because that celebration music is like a sped up reorchestration of the dark side theme.
Oh.
And maybe... Maybe not. Your theories on who is who will be illuminated with that information. I'm just saying. No comment.
Jar Jar is Lord Sidious.
Exactly.
Is what you're leading me to believe.
Jar Jar is Lord Sidious. I tried to tell you. You got it. You cracked the code.
Justin, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
What a blast.
Wow. We should do this more often.
Here's the thing is, I feel like I am always disappointing you that I don't have as much love for this franchise as you do.
It is not. I don't need you to love it. This is just a fascinating experiment.
but honest to God, I do feel like this is a social experiment that I'm doing on myself, which is like, what do you do when you show a woman who previously has no connection to Star Wars,
yeah.
And you, like, immerse her in it for, you know, a year or so, mm-hmm. what happens? And I kind of want scientists to, like, probe my brain after this experience and be like, yeah, she lost, this quarter of her brain is shriveled now.
I think it goes up from here. I really do.
Okay.
Like, keep in
That's
mind,
good.
You are in the, like, the muck of it.
And, you know, it's like I said, I don't think, I think this is a perfectly average movie. Justin, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, you can find me wherever toys are sold, on Twitter, TikTok, and on Instagram, and I guess Threads, I guess, at Freddy's Roommate.
Now I'm just imagining a like Barbie version of you.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Like as a toy.
Yes.
Like there's a lot aisle of Barbies, and then there's a little Justin doll too.
Wouldn't that be cool? Forget about the Ken movie. Make a Justin Ken movie.
I'm just kidding, man. What a good movie. Man, sometimes I think about how good the Barbie movie is.
I think you should do That's What I'm Barbieing About.
Before you can have a sick-ass duel of the fates with your double-sided lightsaber, you gotta skywalk before you run. Skywalk Before You Run is hosted and edited by me, Mary Clay Watt. The cover art and music is by Jason Hilton. Follow the podcast on Instagram and Threads, at Skywalk Before You Run. Follow me on TikTok and Twitch at MCWhatsUp and on Instagram at MCTurnDownForWatt. Go to patreon.com/talkingaboutpod to become a supporter of this podcast, join the Deus Ex Media Discord server, and gain access to bonus material. This podcast is a proud member of the Deus Ex Media Network.